The back end of it that you don't see, the processes that actually make the company function, are identical. From the VA company to the freight dispatching company, I can pick one person up from one company, move them into another in the same role. They do the exact same thing. So we've set up our processes so that we could replicate this model in any business. So that's how we've been able to create this model.
Welcome to Get Unstuck and On Target, the weekly podcast that offers senior leaders insights and strategies to not only lead with confidence and vision, but also to achieve groundbreaking results. I'm your host, Mike O'Neill. I coach top-level executives on the power of ethical leadership to forge teams to be as united as they are effective. In each episode, join me for insightful conversations with leaders just like you, providing practical advice to help you get unstuck and propel you and your company forward. Let's get started. Joining me is Joe Rare. Joe is an underground serial entrepreneur, investor, outsourcing expert, father, and husband. He currently owns 4 digital companies, 5 wedding venues, and as well as many real estate investment properties. Joe focuses on helping small to mid-sized businesses around the world while working from the comfort of his home in Montana, enjoying big sky country with his family. All of his companies are being fully run by his virtual assistants. And that whole idea has intrigued me, and it's that topic that I would like to kind of center around. Building businesses around your lifestyle so you can be both successful in business and spend more time with your family. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Joe, I was just looking at this introduction, and there was a little bit a kind of a pattern. 4 digital companies, 5 wedding venues, I wanted to say, and 6 real estate investment properties, just to get the 4, 5, 6 pattern going. I attribute you having many real estate investment properties, but all that to be said, you do some things that just really fascinate me. And so maybe just let you explain in terms that you can do a better job of, what is it you do and how do you do it? And why should we be sitting up paying attention to Joe on this podcast?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the easiest frame of reference to create is that everybody starts a business. If they're entrepreneurs, they want to get into business really to have freedom, to have some level of freedom. And the reality is that most people will never have freedom from their business. Their business will actually cause them to work more, longer hours, probably be away from their family a lot more. The freedom that comes with a business is few and far between. And while some people may be able to create it, one of the aspects that typically goes missing if they are building a business and trying to get freedom is the financial side of it. And so, you know, if somebody has big, big aspirations to grow a business that has, you know, pretty darn good revenue, really good profits, allow you to live whatever lifestyle it is that you choose, that's what I've been able to do while having time freedom on top of the financial freedom. And so I got into business literally for freedom. I wanted to be able to do what I want when I want to do it, be with my kids, and I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, so way before kids, but When I became a father, that was the number one thing. I never want to miss a single thing, not one thing. So I got to coach my daughter's basketball team, you know, multiple years. We just actually had our meeting last night for club volleyball. So now we got a traveling team to be on, you know, my other daughter and our horseback riding. And, you know, now we were just talking this morning on the way to drop them off at school. They want to do rodeo. And so, you know, this summer is going to be rodeo. And it's like, but I want to be able to do all those things and provide everything that we, you know, could dream of. You can't do it in business if you're locked into it, if you're the one who has to actually operate it. And so my specialty is creating a process for our business model that allows me the freedom to have other people run the business. And it just so happens we can create cost leverage by using overseas staff. And that's been, you know, kind of my claim to fame.
You know, I didn't share the names of your companies, I'm a little bit intrigued by, I can see how they kind of fit together, but for those who are listening, they're kind of saying, well, what Joe is describing might not apply to me. Would you mind just kind of walking through the variety of businesses that you have?
Yeah. So, I focus on things that have leverage, which is, you know, pretty much technology has a lot of leverage, but the core company, the biggest company that we have is Level 9 Virtual. So Level 9 Virtual. And that's our virtual assistant services company. So we actually provide the virtual assistants using my model, using what I've done, dedicated virtual assistants, teams of virtual assistants that have various skill sets so that we can submit tasks, projects, things like that, get things done and get them done faster with highly skilled labor that just happens to have cost leverage because they're overseas. And so Level 9 Virtual is the first one. The bio, I think, is a little outdated. So we have Level 9 Virtual. We have a SaaS product, which is a marketing automation software branded for the wedding industry, because I also own a marketing agency for the wedding industry, which is how I ended up investing in wedding venues. And then we, over the past couple of years, we actually started a couple, last year, we started a couple extra businesses. We started a freight dispatching company, which is just silly because I don't know anything about freight and dispatching and logistics. I don't know anything about it, but my business partner, one of my business partners came to me and said, "Hey, I got an idea," and pitched it. And, you know, when he said dispatching in my head, I actually thought he meant like 911 dispatching. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think you can just like do that. I'm pretty sure that you have to have like a very specific, you know, law around it. And like it has to work for the government. I don't know. But he goes, no, freight. Like you see all the truckers, right? Like somebody has to actually set up those loads for them to pick up and drive away with. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. He's like, yeah, we'll use the virtual assistants to do it. And so we built an entire company around using virtual assistants to dispatch for freight companies. And we built that business and from zero to profitable instantly. It was very fast. And then we also have a data supply company, which is identity resolution. So somebody shows up on a website, you don't know who they are typically, but if they opt in, you get their information. However, what about the 70 or 80% of people that bounce? Well, we can actually match a high percentage of those people and create more leads, which is actually what that is going on in the background. And so we started that business. So that ends up being 5. And then I still have the last business, which is Campground Digital. It's a marketing agency for campgrounds. And that's kind of not anything that we give a lot of attention to. We still have about 40 or 50 clients left. And we haven't really operated it, like marketed it or tried to grow it in 2.5 years. And we've just had clients just stay forever. And so that's still highly profitable. It's a great business. I probably should do something with it. But my focus is in freedom. And so if it requires me to step back into it, then I'm probably not going to do it. You know, when we launched the freight company and we launched the data supply company, I had a commitment. I said, I'll give 4 months to the business. If we can't go from zero to profitable and, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 a month in revenue in 4 months, then I don't want to be a part of it. And it's not the right business model for me. And both of those hit it. And so we were good to go. And so, yeah. So while they are very different in a sense, the back end of it that you don't see, the processes that actually make the company function are identical. So from the VA company to the freight dispatching company, I can pick one person up from one company, move them into another in the same role. They do the exact same thing. So we've set up our processes so that we could replicate this model in any business. Even if it was brick and mortar, you're going to have front end staff and people on the front side, but the back end operations, what's going on in back of the house, we can make it identical across the board. So that's how we've been able to create this model.
As I've got no entrepreneurs, it seems to me entrepreneurs have far more ideas than they have time capacity to implement. But you've shared a number of things, and you're correct. Your bio did not reflect hardly any of the things you just kind of mentioned.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Joe for a moment. Joe, you're managing this business that is comprised of multiple businesses. You have mm-hmm. a process in place that has applied in a wide variety of settings. What could be a derailer of Joe in what we're describing here?
I mean, the derailer would be the staff, right? If my team decided to dismantle and everybody decided to leave, then the companies would fall apart. But the kind of the cool part is that even, you know, it's like my wife's biggest fear, right? Well, what happens if something happens to dad, right? Well, on the family side, that's devastating. That's all that. On the business side, it doesn't matter as much. The businesses will still operate. They'll still run. They still have profit. They have management in place. They have staff in place. They have financial advisors in place. Like, you know, we have trusts in place. We have all of that. So to derail the system would be that my entire staff has to leave. I mean, maybe market conditions, if the market changes and, you know, now there's no need for marketing in some sense, there's no need for dispatchers in some sense, those would derail it. But aside from market conditions, the only thing that could really break the system is if for some reason the entire staff that we've been building for years decided they all didn't like working for us anymore and then they left. And that would be kind of it. Because other than that, the system, they run themselves. The companies are run by the team. There's a lot of automation built in. So we use a lot of technology to make sure that everything runs and makes it very simple. That's one thing that, you know, if I get into a deal, if I'm getting into a business or even a real estate property investment, it's got to be simple. I'm a very simple-minded person. I don't want complex, because the bigger you grow something, the more complex it's going to get anyway. But if you start with something complex and then grow it, it's going to get unbelievably crazy. And so I need it to be simple. I need it to be, you know, very easy. So my hope would be that I could take somebody from the Philippines and have them run the entire company. So that's what I'm looking for.
Are most of your VAs from a certain part of the world?
The Philippines.
Can you explain, for those who are not familiar, why did you choose the Philippines?
So I tried everywhere. So I did the India, I did Pakistan, I did Sri Lanka, I did Vietnam. I went all over Asia, tried pretty much every place you could imagine, even Canada, the UK, Australia, we went everywhere. The thing that we figured out is based on, you know, because the value of a huge portion of the value for virtual assistants is cost leverage, right? So how does cost over there and the value of the dollar in that country matter and work in comparison to here? And so cost leverage is a huge piece of it. So if there isn't cost leverage, there's not a lot of room to make this work the way that I'm attempting to make it work. The second piece of it is that when we landed on the Philippines, they really, really follow American culture. So if you were to look at, for example, we do a lot of marketing stuff, right? So you look at design from, like, let's say India or Bangladesh or something like that versus design in the Philippines. The Philippines are going to match more of just the cultural color schemes and the font styles and like just everything that's being done in the United States. They're much more in tune because they watch our movies, they listen to our music, they, you know, street signs are in English, universities teach in English. So it was really a good fit for those reasons. The one area that isn't as successful in the Philippines is things like sales. Mm. And sales, because you need to be much more of an aggressive personality type, you need to be very, you know, outright and you know, future pacing and all these things. That's not really the cultural kind of personality profile of that, of the Philippines. So we don't use the Philippines for the sales side of things.
Mm.
Right. And so that's the one area that doesn't quite fit. But that's the reason that we chose the Philippines, is that they just understand our culture. And, you know, we get on calls and I'll have my team on, like every year we do a kickoff party at the beginning of the year. And so we have hundreds and hundreds of people on a Zoom call and we're doing parties and contests and all these things. And what's funny is to see people wearing like a New York Yankees hat in the Philippines or 49ers. And I'm just like, how are you wearing a San Francisco? You know, you know, they follow our culture. So it makes sense.
You mentioned that Level 9 Virtual is kind of the umbrella organization. Did I understand that correctly?
It's not the umbrella, but it is the largest of the entities that we run. Yeah.
For those who know nothing about using VAs, I know they can go to your website, learn a great deal for that. Is there a pretty steep learning curve, or have you found that folks who are new to it adapt quickly?
Well, the great part you know, if you go out and you try to do it yourself, there's going to be a learning curve. You're going to have a lot of trial and error. So my advice is always, even if in the future your plan is to go hire yourself and find your own virtual assistants and you want to do that later, start off, pay a little bit more, use a company like mine or somebody else, but like do it because we beat the learning curve. We can educate you on communication. Out of every challenge that we have with a client using a virtual assistant, the number one, like 95% of every challenge is communication based. It's expectations. It's making sure somebody understands what you mean. What we find a lot about ourselves is that when we go to communicate our ideas, our thoughts, our projects, expectations with somebody who might have English as their second language, or who isn't sitting next to you and doesn't know you and doesn't know your business, we find out that ourselves, we're not very good at communicating. And we make a lot of assumptions that other people just understand what we mean. And so one of the first things that I teach every client that comes in is realize that in communication, the person communicating, the communicator, is responsible for the person being communicated with. It's our responsibility to make sure they understand what we are saying. If they don't understand it, it's our fault, not their fault. It's our fault. And the moment that you get that lesson and you understand it, it doesn't just help with virtual assistants. It'll help with your children. It'll help with your friends and your spouse and everybody else, because it's our job to ensure that communication is effective. And so that is the number one thing that will make or break your success with virtual assistants. And we have a whole process that we give everybody on how to communicate, ways to train and teach your virtual assistant, like all the things that you want them to do in your business, get them up to speed on your business. And we have an entire process that we just teach it to you. We give it to every client so that they have the most success possible with their VAs.
Yeah, I've talked to folks who use VAs, but it seems like it's short-term, project-minded. Yeah. You're running your business using VAs. How do you instill a sense of, pardon the expression, to loyalty to, to you and to your organizations? What do you find has worked best?
The same thing that works when you have local people, right?
Which is?
Providing opportunities. It's providing a career path. It's understanding what their needs are, what their goals are, who they want to be in their business, you know, in their career. Some of them want to come in and they want a short-term opportunity so that they can go do something on their own. So we had a video editor, one of my favorite video editors we've ever had. He came in and he got to a point where he's a video editor. Like, we don't, you know, you're not going to go from a video editor to an operations director. So your upside is slightly limited in that. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could build a video editing team underneath him, but he chose to go out and build his own business and do his own thing. And so when he told me that's what his goal was, I said, great. So let's take the next 6 months. Let's make sure that you know all the things you're going to need so that you can actually manage a client base. Because it's one thing to be good at video at editing a bunch of videos. It's another thing to be able to manage your client base. And then how do you collect payment? How do you manage that relationship, customer success, and all of these things? He didn't have any idea how to do that. But over a 6 month window, or 5 or 6 months, I forget, we helped him understand those things. He left, he built his own little business, but his brother works with us, his cousin works with us. And part of the reason was, is we create a culture in our business that we want the best for everybody. So I kind of reverse engineered how we operate Level 9 Virtual, which is, We provide employment for virtual assistants, for people in the Philippines, South America, wherever it is that our team is. We provide this opportunity. Our number one focus is the VA. And somebody will say, well, what about your clients? And I go, well, they're number two. And the reason they're number two is because if we take care of number one takes care of number two. So if we just do the right thing and we provide good experience for the VAs, we train them, we keep them up, we give them a trajectory of growth and opportunity for them, for their family. If we can do those things, they will take care of our clients and I don't have to stress about worrying about clients. They take care of clients. And so that's been our success, is focus on the same things as somebody would want locally. What's the trajectory of my career? Where do I get to go? Like, well, what do I want? You know, you know, one of the stories I always tell is that I made a huge mistake with a very prominent player in our company a year and a half ago. And the challenge was, I believed she should have been pursuing a different part of the company. I actually wanted to move her into an executive level role. Well, I find out through heartache and pain that that was not in her skill set. That was not part of her desire. And I couldn't figure out that while we're trying to push her into this role, there's tons of friction. Mm. And I could not figure it out. And sure enough, she ends up leaving. And I think, like, oh my gosh, the whole world's falling apart. Like, you know, one of our A players left and oh my gosh. And I realized, like, I was trying to put her somewhere she didn't belong. It's, you know, square peg, round hole. And that was my fault. And so I had a huge learning lesson that I needed to do more listening. I needed to understand their goals and really make sure that we consult them and guide them on their paths. And that's how we create loyalty.
wonderful response there. Do me a favor. Think about your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
In keeping with the title of this podcast, can you think of an example where either you or a client got stuck? And when did that happen? What did you do to get unstuck?
Oh my gosh. On my entrepreneurial journey, I got stuck really bad when I had an agency back. I feel like this is 2016-ish. Had an agency. I think we were running about 14 or 18 virtual assistants at the time, but I also had 27 US employees sitting in an office space. And we were doing really well on, you know, as far as people would think, right? Lots of clients, lots of work going on, but we had two clients responsible for about 40% of our revenue. Both of them canceled in about a 2.5 week period of time. So killed us. All of our profit margin was gone, and I had to start using debt to pay payroll. And so instead of letting people go, which would have been the smart thing to do, I'm a hardcore optimist. And I just said, we'll replace the revenue. It'll be no big deal, right? Let's get to it. But the person in charge of business development wasn't developing any business. And so we're in this like conundrum where we weren't actually growing. And so we were barely remaining the same. And so I got really stuck in a rut to where I'm taking on personal debt to pay payroll because I didn't want anybody to lose their job. And I thought I was doing the right thing. In hindsight, we find out that was the worst idea in the world, but it got me to where I am today. So I got to be grateful for it. And so the getting unstuck part of it was I had a mentor who advised me when things went south to cut and shut down the agency and start over. And he gave me some really great advice. And, you know, that agency was kind of doing everything for everybody. Everybody was our client if they had money and they were willing to pay us to do something, which means if everybody's your client, nobody's your client, your business won't grow. And so sure enough, you know, stubborn me, huge ego, I didn't listen to him. And at that time, I think he had a business that he was restarting and he was doing about $60,000 a month in top line revenue with, I think, two team members. Well, here I am with 27 US employees, 14 or 18, Filipinos, you know, VAs, and we're doing way more revenue than that, but we're not making any money. And he has huge profit margins. Well, so I don't do anything and I don't change anything. And I keep stacking on debt. We keep trying to rebuild. We keep doing these things. Everybody's getting paid except me. So my relationships at home are challenged. You know, I'm frustrated all the time. I'm putting in extra hours. It's not working. It's not in alignment with who I wanted to be. And then I see an interview with that mentor and another guy, and he went from 60,000 to 400,000 a month in revenue in about 6 months. And I went, whoa. And so I texted him and I said, oh my God, I just saw your interview. What'd you do? And the only thing he wrote back was he said, you didn't listen to me, did you? And I was like, nope. So within the next couple of days, I let everybody go. I shut down the office. I walked away from my lease, got sued for it later. Dealt with all of the legal side of that and everything that was to come, but took his advice and said, I'm going to do one thing for one niche. I'm not going to do everything for everybody. I'm going to do one thing for one niche. I'm going to do it better than anybody else. And so I restarted my business with one client. I was getting paid like $3,000 a month. And I went from essentially zero to $109,000 a month in 4 months using only virtual assistants. Rebuilt our model and that was the basis of how I got unstuck in my entrepreneurial journey, but it also became the framework for how we've built every business since. And then how we've helped, you know, hundreds of clients do the exact same thing.
Fantastic example. You know, Joe, if you have fine-tuned kind of the secret recipe that's working for you, the process that could be applied in multiple industries, and you learn from your lessons, I know that we started this podcast by describing that you want to enjoy your family. You live in Montana, referred to as Big Sky Country. When you have a formula for success, is it hard to not just adding more, and you lose the whole purpose for doing this to begin with?
Saying no to things is the hardest part of my life at this point. Like this is the most difficult thing is to see an opportunity sitting in front of you. I know that if I put my hand on it and I put my model into it, that I can make it a success. But that comes at the expense of, well, guess what? It's winter and we're having the worst winter in the history of Montana. But during winter, I typically snowmobile like every day. And so I won't take on a new project come winter, and I never take one on. And so here we are, we're sitting here begging and praying for snow. And I'm sitting here with opportunities sitting on my debt. Like I could right now pull the trigger and I could become, you know, a majority partner in a project. We could put my model into it and put in place, but it's going to take away from the life that I want, from the things that I want to be able to do. So I'm saying no to it. And saying no is the most challenging piece of it. But I think that exercising that muscle and turning down things that don't align with what you want and who you want to be and how you want to live your life, it's one of the most liberating things that you can do. It creates the most happiness. It creates the most success, because I could easily indulge myself in projects and investments and all these things that would take, and I could work 14, 15 hours a day, every single day, 7 days a week, and probably make tens of millions more than we do. However, it's going to eliminate the entire goal. And there's nothing better than the ability to go, well, I shut off, we can set our phones down and we don't have to look at them until tomorrow. That's awesome. You know, we can be genuinely with our kids, give them attention. We can horseback ride. We can coach teams. We can do all that stuff. So to me, that outweighs it. It's just saying no is very hard. It's very hard, especially when there's dollar signs attached to it. And, you know, I didn't come from money. So the opportunity to make a lot of money is very appealing to me. And, you know, it's something that I really, really like, you know, was aggressive towards. So it's hard to say no. That's the easiest answer.
Joe, we've had a somewhat of a far-ranging conversation. Goal was to give listeners some insights to what you have done, lessons learned along the way. What do you want the viewers and the listeners to have as takeaways?
Well, I think one of the easiest things, and actually I need to go have a conversation with somebody close to me about this right now, which is go fail. You know, when I look back, and actually my wife reminded me of this, I want to say it was like last week or something. And she, you know, we were having a conversation about somebody else and how they've just been challenged in getting something up and going and getting running. And one of the things that she mentioned, she goes, yeah, but do you remember back when we first met and you were kind of running this thing over here and then, you know, that was doing fine and then it failed. And then you tried this other thing and then that thing never took off and it failed. And then you tried this other thing. She went through this laundry list and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how you stuck with me. Like, wow. I mean, if you were to imagine from the beginning of a relationship, it's like failure, 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 failure. And like, and she was there, you know, and we weren't successful in the beginning. And so it's kind of interesting to see, to look back at that, because I forget the failures as fast as they happen. And so I think that if I could give a piece of advice to people, it would be like, your failures don't matter. I don't know who said this, but it's stuck with me lately, which is if it's not going to matter in 5 years, then don't worry about it today. And the failure that you're going to have won't matter in 5 years. So go out and try something. You know, one of our keys to success and why we've been able to launch multiple companies and why we can do this with clients as well is that we'll go out and we'll make offers to the market and say, hey, I have this idea. Let's go see if somebody will buy it. Then we'll build the business on the back end. Right. But once somebody gives us money, now we don't have a choice. We have to buy it. We have to build it. You know, Visitor Match, this company, which is the data resolution company, we started Visitor Match with an idea. I'd been buying data and I just said, you know, we should see if we could sell this to clients. So we went out, we sold it. Next thing you know, we have about $20,000 in top line revenue coming in every month. And we were like, well, we should probably name the business, get a website, build out marketing automation. We should probably like build a business around it because it's real. And I have the ability to go try something and fail faster than most people will get off their ass and just try something once. And so my recommendation to everybody is to just try, just do it. Go fail, because you're going to forget that failure in just a few years. And it won't hurt as bad the moment you hit success. But you'll never find that success if you just don't try and fail. So fail. Like, it's okay. Fail's awesome.
Joe, that was fantastic. But before we wrap up with our final thoughts, I've got a question for our listeners. Are people following you because they have to or because they want to? Are they obligated or are they inspired? I'm a leadership coach, and I work with executives who have a successful track record, but are now they're feeling stuck in their careers or how to move their company forward. They're frustrated because they're finding that with each level of success, the bar gets set even higher, and what worked in the past is no longer working. I work with these leaders to uncover hidden blind spots, challenge limiting beliefs, and foster a strong sense of accountability. So if feeling stuck sounds like you or someone you know, let's talk. Head over to bench-builders.com to schedule a call. So, Joe, you really have opened up my eyes to a number of things. Thank you for sharing your expertise. If folks want to learn more, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
You can email me direct, joe@level9virtual.com. So joe@level9virtual.com. You can also meet with my team, level9virtual.com. There's a big yellow button on the top right corner that says book a call. Those are the easiest ways to reach us, and you can connect with me anytime. And we're happy to help.
I'm encouraging our listeners to do just that. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I also want to thank our listeners for joining us again. I hope you have picked up on some quick wins from Joe that will help you get unstuck and on target. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Get Unstuck and On Target. I hope you've gained insights to help you lead with confidence and drive your organization forward. Remember, at Bench Builders, we're committed to your success, your leadership excellence, and your strategic growth. If you've enjoyed our conversation today, please leave a review, rate, and subscribe to keep up with our latest episodes. This show really grows when listeners like you share it with others. Who do you know who needs to hear what we talked about today? Until next time, I encourage you to stay focused on the target and continue to break new ground on your leadership path.